ate it for lunch.
All right, let's call tonight's meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission to order, please. We get a roll call.
McBride.
Here.
Holstrom.
Here.
Merkin.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Sherwood.
Here.
Cable.
Here.
Smith absent.
Are there any changes or additions to the minutes from our last meeting, the 5th of July? Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved. Any changes or additions to tonight's agenda? Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved. All right, we now have time for public comment. This is an opportunity for any members of the public to offer any input or comment on any issue that is not already on the agenda for this evening. So again, not on the agenda for tonight. Is there anyone who'd like to speak? Okay. And we can move on to our first public hearing. This is regarding subdivision 08-17, Rolling Hills Plat 4. Preliminary major subdivision plat. Emily.
Okay. This is a major preliminary subdivision request. The applicant is Jonathan Schroeder of the Davis Brown Law Firm on behalf of Mark and Lori Lingle, who live on Rolling Hills Drive, which is the location of this subdivision. In Section 15 of Indian Creek Township, and we're just north, about a three-quarters of a mile north of Maxwell. So this the request is a major preliminary subdivision plat to divide existing lot 2 into two lots for one additional single-family dwelling. The purpose of this division is to create a lot for a single-family dwelling for the property owner's parents. There is an alternative compliance request for this subdivision, and that's for the access easement, and I'll get into that more specifically in just a minute here. So we are just about three-quarters of a mile north of Maxwell in Indian Creek Township, pretty much center of the township there. The zoning of the subject property, which is right here, is R1. That was rezoned from A1 to R1 in 1977. There is some A2 zoning and some R2 or AR zoning, excuse me, to the south of the subdivisions there, and these were the residential manufactured home park is Rolling Hills Plat 1. Rolling Hills Plat 2 is this kind of north and western area, and then Rolling Hills Plat 3. The subject property is included in. So this would be a division of the subject property here and would be considered Rolling Hills Plat 4. The R2 district and the residential manufactured home district were rezoned from A1 in 1974, and the parcel that's zoned AR was rezoned from A1 in 2007. So within a quarter mile of this area, there are 17 single-family dwellings. There are five parcels that don't have single-family dwellings that are 35 acres or greater in size, and that would allow for us to issue a zoning permit for a single-family dwelling in the A1 district. Again, Rolling Hills Plat 2 is here, and then I'll get to the history in a minute of Rolling Hills Plat 3, but that's located here. This is the reason for the major subdivision. Rolling Hills Plat 3 was done through a minor subdivision in 2013, so that's the reason for the major subdivision. So Lot 2 of the subject property is of Rolling Hills Plat 3, was created in 2013 when Parcel A and Lot 32 of Rolling Hills Plat 2 were reconfigured into Lots 1 and 2 of Rolling Hills Plat 3. through a minor subdivision. The entire Rolling Hills area was rezoned from A1 to R1 in 1974. Rolling Hills Plat 2 was divided in 1977. Again, the Rolling Hills Plat 1 is the residential manufactured home district to the south. So here's the proposed division. Again, just dividing the existing lot once into two. So the proposed lot one would be just to the north of the existing dwelling. That would be 1.22 acres. And proposed lot two would be 10.54 acres. This would contain the existing single-family dwelling and the accessory structure. This parcel does have some floodplain boundary on the very western edge, but there's no development proposed in that area. So the alternative compliance request. So the applicant has submitted this request for a shared access drive. The Story County Land Development Regulations include the following regulation under the General Site Planning Standards. Shared access easements may be used in cases where any lot, parcel, or tract has frontage to an existing or proposed public or private road, but does not meet the 300-foot access separation distance. Shared access easements shall be parallel to the front lot line and shall not exceed 50 feet in width. This is just a little diagram about how planning and development staff are interpreting this regulation. So I have a 22-foot-wide paved road here. The right-of-way is 66 feet wide. Here I have a shared access. The easement is 50 feet wide here and is adjacent to the right-of-way, so it runs parallel to the right-of-way. Beyond the 50-foot easement, these driveways are on the respective lots, but they do have an access, shared access easement or shared drive on that access easement. So this is the proposed plat. Again, proposed lot one to the north there, and then proposed lot two to the south. The proposed access easement here is extending all the way up to the drive of the house, the driveway of the home. In accordance with our regulations, the access easement would not go any further than the 50-foot setback line there. But the applicant is requesting, because of the topography of the site and because of the natural resources on the site, that they are able to use the existing driveway all the way up to the location of the proposed dwelling. So the 50-foot easement would not be sufficient to provide access to the proposed building site. A shared access drive would minimize the access points along Rolling Hills Drive right-of-way and reduce impervious surface on the site. We also think this would better preserve the natural areas and the existing natural resources to the north, and we'll look at some site photos. So planning and development staff do support the alternative compliance request that was submitted. This is an image looking southwest toward the subject property from the bottom of the gravel drive. This is the home that would be on proposed lot two here. Looking northeast up the gravel drive toward the single-family dwelling is on the right here. The proposed single-family dwelling would be on the left here, the proposed lot one. Here's looking northeast toward the wood area in proposed lot one. Looking east toward the garden, the property to the directly to the east is a farmstead and an agricultural production. Here's looking east towards the existing shed that will be located on proposed lot two. Looking southeast toward the single family dwelling, which will be on proposed lot two as well. Proposed lot two in this image would be on the right here. This is proposed lot one and would go south from here. Let's see. Looking northwest, this is a wooded area that's on the north side of proposed lot 2. It does create a buffer between proposed lot 1. I'm sorry, the wooded area on the north side of proposed lot 1. It does create a buffer between proposed lot 1 and the property to the north. This is looking south across the yard, across the pasture area behind the single family dwelling on proposed lot 2. There is a lake located to the south of this dwelling, which can kind of be seen back here. So this is looking southwest down the gravel drive toward Rolling Hills Drive. Looking northwest from the gravel drive, and so now I'm kind of going down the driveway here. Here's looking north toward the adjacent properties from the bottom of the gravel drive. This is Rolling Hills Drive again here. And then this is an image of the property directly to the north of proposed lot 1. So this area is designated rural residential in the C2C future land use map designation. We feel that this is meeting this area's principles because it is clustering residential sites. No agricultural land would be taken out of production, preserving agriculture and being sensitive to environmental features. Principle 4 is when development is adjacent to agricultural uses, there are adequate buffers to minimize conflicts. There really is this proposed division surrounded on three sides by residential properties and is buffered a little bit to the east from the agricultural use. So the utility providers and related services for this property: Alliant Energy, Central Iowa Rural Water, City of Maxwell Fire Department, and Story County Ambulance Service. We have received letters from the applicant from the Rural Water and Alliant Energy indicating that they should have sufficient services to sufficient water pressure and capacity to serve this proposed new dwelling. So major subdivision plat, because this couldn't be an agricultural or minor subdivision plat, we had to consider it a major subdivision plat. This does require preliminary plat review, and so that's why we're here, doing a major subdivision. Just comments from the interagency review team. The septic on the proposed lot 1 may need to extend into the south lot. Now, typically, there would be an easement required if you don't own the adjacent property that the septic easement is on. But in this case, the property owner is planning to maintain ownership of both lots. Planning and development just has specific questions asking for signed statements from the fire chief about capacity, gas and electric, and availability of water. We just had some additions to add to the plat that were required in the major subdivision requirements. We did send notice letters to property owners within a quarter mile of the proposed subdivision request on July 27th. A copy of the public notice was also emailed to the City of Maxwell. We have not received any comments at this time. So just a few things to point out in the analysis of this major preliminary subdivision plat request. The purpose of the subdivision is to create a lot for a single-family dwelling to accommodate the applicant's parents. A major subdivision is required due to the previous minor subdivision, which took place in 2013. All bulk requirements for the R1 Transitional Residential District are met through this subdivision. The request for alternative compliance is supported by staff to extend beyond that 50-foot maximum width as required by our land development regulations. because this will really limit the number of accesses on Rolling Hills Drive and preserve the natural resources on the site. There is, again, a natural wooded buffer that separates proposed lot 1 from the properties to the north. And with this subdivision, this natural buffer will be preserved. So with that, it is the recommendation of Planning and Development staff that the Planning and Zoning Commission recommend approval of the major preliminary subdivision plat, Rolling Hills Subdivision, plat 4, including the request for alternative compliance for the shared access easement as put forth in case SUB 0817, and that is alternative number 1. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Any questions for the staff?
So, I thought this, at some point in the future, can we have somebody sit down with me and talk to me about this major and minor subdivision and how they interact and what that's about?
Absolutely, yep.
The latest is configured now, the owner is going to maintain ownership of both properties.
Correct.
Are some of the assumptions that are being made, or any of them, contingent upon them owning both, or could one of the properties be sold?
One of the properties could be sold. That's why we included that access easement.
Okay.
And that's why Environmental Health brought up the possibility of needing a septic easement on this lot to the south for the new home. Does that make sense?
Easement means that two dwellings would share the same septic system?
No, they wouldn't share. It just, the soils on proposed lot 1 may or may not, because they haven't done any testing, but may or may not, the size and the soils may not be conducive for a septic system. So the laterals may have to extend into proposed lot 2.
Oh, I see.
This is actually pretty common that you have a septic easement. So that's all. But in the case then that they ever do sell proposed lot 1 or 2, then that easement would need to be in place.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
I think this is a private drive that Rolling Hills Drive kind of ends at. Is that
mm-hmm.
correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's correct.
Is there I'm thinking about the driveway situation, and is there, maybe it would depend on if there's any more development there, and there's room for other houses. Do you see Rolling Hills Drive being extended to part of that driveway?
It's possible. The actual right-of-way on Rolling Hills Drive actually extends kind of south and east, almost further up than it actually appears. I just think that the right-of-way was never really constructed. It ended up just to be a driveway since it was that one house there. But potentially, if there's a further development, potentially, yes.
Sorry.
Is there a mechanism in place to back up? If the intention of creating a new lot was to sell the lot, would there be a septic easement required right from the get-go?
Yes.
Is there a mechanism in place to catch it when and if the properties do separate?
There are.
It would be reviewed by the Environmental Health Department.
Yeah.
Because environmental
time of transfer inspection
systems at time of transfer anyway, so that would be the moment when they would catch.
That was their preferred method.
That's how they prefer. Okay. Alright. And then Rolling Hills Drive, is it public? It is public right of way?
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah.
Is it maintained privately? Or?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? We do have the applicant's attorney here, Jonathan Schroeder, is here from Davis Brown Law Firm, if you have any questions for him.
Any other questions for staff? Okay. Would the applicant like to address us, or?
I think I did a great job. So if there's no more questions, then we'll serve time for other people to ask questions. That'd be the case.
Okay. I might have a question for the applicant, if you wouldn't mind stepping up to that, to the podium. And you can totally just say pass on this one, too. Would you be willing to share a little bit more about the situation, the family situation that has led to wanting to create a separate lot to build an extra dwelling?
They just honestly, they just needed more space than what the current single family residence offers. The parents are older, but it's not a dependent care situation.
They're not infirmed.
Correct. Yeah. No. They're very sharp. So they just wanted to be able to honestly live closer, and they have 12 acres to work with. And so this is actually back when it was Rolling Hills Plat 2. This was originally platted with that to be, I believe, is about 15 lots. So there's lots of room there. So it was more of a, they just wanted to be closer to the rest of the family situations.
Any idea of the square footage of the house that will be
built? I have not seen that. I've asked. They have put a deposit on a manufactured home, and I've asked for blueprints of that, but I haven't seen them yet. It's going to be of a good size. It's going to be 2 or 3 bedroom. So,
thanks.
Yep.
I'll explain why I asked those questions in a minute. Any other questions of the applicant? Okay, we're going to call him in a few minutes.
That's good.
I'm interested in the concept of accessory dwellings in Story County, and I see a lot of money being invested into a subdivision. You know, where if this were a case where we just need a place for our older parents to live so we can care for them more closely, you know, this seems like a lot of money investment going into it. It's a logistical thing to accommodate that. So that's why the questions. I'd love to see Story County pursue that at some point in the future. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to speak on this subdivision proposal, either for or against, or just offer general comments? If you would mind stepping up to the podium and giving us your name and address for the record.
My name is Dale Messenger. I live at 30558 Rolling Hills Drive. My property is lot number 1 of the minor subdevelopment that was made in 2013. And my property is just to the north. My question deals with something that I'm not sure is covered in this application, but there is a tax that is shared by 7 to 9 of the Rolling Hills residents related to the pond that has shared property. And currently, Mark Lingle, the applicant, has 1 share of that tax. If that property were to be sold at the deceasement of his family or for whatever reason, I was curious to know whether there's any legal ramifications to that piece of property taking 1 of the additional shares of that pond tax that currently exists.
Take a stab at that. Staff, you can back me up or explain further, but regarding Story County's development regulations, there's no direction or guidance on that issue. It would be a civil issue regarding your covenants and your homeowners association management of that communal space. Is that?
That's what I'm thinking. Is this part of your restricted covenants where this language is?
Well, I bought my property in 2012. And in the research that was done during that time, there was a homeowners association, but it has been ineffective or unofficial since the late 90s. However, the local residents there have kept it going. We have added they added before I joined the neighborhood, an aeration system for the pond for control of algae. And a number of the members in the Rolling Hills community share in the expense of the electricity to run that aeration. However, it's a volunteer basis because we don't have an official association that's active currently. So I didn't know whether the pond tax would fall under that unofficial thing or whether that is part of this hearing today.
Well, it's certainly a good a good time to pursue a conversation with the other property owners about that. But as far as our regulations don't offer any guidance on that.
All right, thank you.
Yep. Any other comments? Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Mari Lindner, and I live at 30510 Rolling Hills Drive. And our property is adjacent to both Dale and the Lengels property. We sit directly to the north. Our house sits on a hill, and Lengels' house sits on a hill, so we look pretty much eye to eye. There is a ravine that drops down between the two houses. The property line, and I don't know if we can use anything to show, but the property line, if there's a map there at all, shows that it is a straight, that gives some indication. The property line shows that it is a straight line on the north side. The whole area between their house and our house, practically the whole area, is a ravine with a groundwater, and that's the ravine, and it goes up through our property at an angle. So that's our property from the corner where the triangle is, straight north. We have like 400 foot that way. So we leave that area for wildlife. We like to have the birds. We like to have deer and pheasant come through. The odd part about the property line is that we leave that natural area. It goes up the hill towards Lengels, and neither of us really maintain it. But where they're showing the lot will start for lot one actually is on what appears to be their side of the ravine and woods, even though at that point it is our property up to that corner. We, like I say, we don't bother Lengels. They put things up there, and that's fine, you know, as long as it's still open for habitat. What I'm afraid of is that if that property is sold off as a separate property, first of all, where they're showing the house will be built is that little flat area right there. North of that, yeah, right north of this tree, right in there. I don't know what the easement is for property line. I'm feeling the house might be fairly close to ours. I was concerned about the septic and if the lateral field went down into that drainage, because the drainage does go right into the pond. And also the same thing that you said, that if at some point Lengels decide not to have their parents live there, what will be the effect of someone being that much closer? We can see Lengels' house very well from ours. If a house is that much closer when the leaves are off, you know, there's a wooded buffer. That's great when there's leaves on. But when the leaves are off, then we're going to have somebody right the back of somebody's house right there. So we just have some concerns about how it will affect our property as well.
The setbacks in the R1 district, the north lot line would be considered the rear lot line. There's a 35-foot rear setback, so the home will need to be 35 feet from there. There's a 40-foot front setback from that. Yep, thank you. And then a 10-foot side setback requirement. Mm-hmm.
And those are minimum.
Yeah.
And do we know where the laterals for the septic are going to be? Do you know the plot plan?
I think there was one, yeah, before this, maybe, that showed the...
That
here we go. Yeah.
Yep, the proposed laterals, Environmental Health has not gone out and done the study on that yet. The septic for the existing home is to the south there. Just a little bit south and west there, right kind of in the center. There you go. But for sure it would come down they would want it to go downhill.
It wouldn't slope towards the ravine.
No, I'm sure.
They'll have to study the soils and determine what kind of system would be appropriate for the soils that are there. So that'll be a part of the analysis.
There's also a geothermal heat system in this house located out in the street here, too.
Okay.
The fact that the health department pointed out the potential need for an easement, I mean, clearly they understand the challenges of this site. That led them to even address that.
Soils information was studied, they just haven't done on site work yet.
When did that happen? When
they would apply for a zoning permit. For
the
yep, that comes like about at the same time as the application for the zoning permit. Yep.
Did we allow you to make all your comments?
I guess I'm just concerned about it was said that the purpose is to leave open rural areas, and that's just hard when you have somebody built right across with you. So, yeah.
I believe it is the intent to preserve that natural area along the north side,
mm-hmm.
and keep the house kind of central on the proposed lot one.
Because it shows that it's straight, but actually it's not. It's cut off by the ravine at that top edge there, the property. So it would be limited to that sort of smaller area to the top right there where they would have access to build.
Because we've surveyed a plat here, we have fresh boundary markers and corner pins everywhere.
Right. Hopefully they're visible, and that's one of the things we would encourage the applicant or the builder to locate in the field. Where they're actually at, so
then
when we go out and do the inspection,
you know,
where the corners are.
So it's a good point, though, that we look at nice straight lines on a map, and the topography out there
doesn't look like that at all.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. Commission comments, questions, action?
I just care so much about all this, but I'm sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, you have your folks living right there in this field. But there are costs involved, and there is impact on other, and that doesn't exclude me from being for this. But I just learned something new that I need to consider. Is there any way to determine what that would be and what kind of impact it would make?
I'm sorry, what would be?
The cost of doing this. I thought you, one of your concerns with the infrastructure, whatever you want to call it, cost for doing it.
Well, it's mostly cost to the property owner.
Okay.
And so, you know.
Hope they can afford it.
and my comment was an aside that, you know, I do believe we are already in a time and headed toward a time where more and more elderly parents or boomerang kids or, you know, are going to be wanting to return, and we live in a county that has regulations that steer us toward open properties and detached homes. Why not allow, for lack of a better term, granny flats in Story County?
It's a form of affordable housing.
Exactly.
No.
It's just if that was the intent here, I would really have some empathy for the applicant, because this is a lot of work to go to just to satisfy our regulation that you can only have one home per lot. Would you like to make another comment?
Yes, I would.
I'm also new at this kind of stuff again, too, but are there building codes that limit the number of stories of a home that can be built on this property? Can you put a four-story structure on it?
We do have a zoning code height limit. What is it?
40 feet. So that's about a two.
Is that to the ridge of the home?
To the very top, yep.
Measured from where?
The ground.
Grade,
yes.
Assuming that there's flat grade, because there isn't any flat grade out there.
It'd be an average grade.
Yes.
Average grade. Thank you.
Sorry, I took this in the wrong direction. Any other discussion?
There's no way a standard that needs to be a confidence class.
Along which line?
Kind of shielding the north line.
There's an existing buffer.
Right, there is an existing buffer, but we don't know if there's going to be some clear cutting or anything like that going on there.
I believe it is the intention to leave all of the existing.
Okay.
And a follow-up question to that, though, is a buffer from what?
Do you have the aerial?
A buffer from one residential lot to another residential lot, where both residential lots...
I'm just kind of asking questions. Not saying anything.
The majority of the buffer on the north line is actually on the property to the north, so there's not... My understanding, I mean, yes, they are going to keep as many trees as they possibly can. It's my understanding that most of the buffer is not actually located on this property. It's located on the adjacent properties. So,
by the buffer, you're saying the ravine in the wooded area.
Correct. Yes. Yep. So.
Any motions?
I make a motion to approve as staff.
We have a motion by Sherwood and a second by Cable. Is there any discussion on the motion? Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Sherwood?
Aye.
Cable?
Yes.
McBride?
Yes.
Holstrom?
Yes.
Merkin?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes. Okay, the motion carries, and we'll move on to the next step. And I'm sure the staff will guide you through that. All right, move on to the next item, which is the rezoning case 05-17 Donaldson rezoning request.
Okay. So like you said, Aaron, I'm sorry this heading is wrong, but it's the applicant is Ryan Holland from Davis Brown on behalf of Nancy and Lauren Donaldson. It's the rezoning case 05-17. So the nature of the request, it's a zoning map amendment. It's a request from the A1 Agricultural District to change to rezone to the AR Agricultural Residential District, the entire parcel. The rezoning would allow for the construction of a single-family dwelling on the southeastern portion of the parcel. It's approximately 3 acres. And then the remainder would be placed into a perpetual conservation easement. The reason why this rezoning, we're hearing this rezoning request has to do with our minimum parcel size of 35 net acres for a parcel to be considered buildable when it's zoned A1 agricultural. There are several exceptions to this requirement. This parcel does not meet those exceptions. However, the AR district and rezoning it to the AR agricultural residential district would allow it to be buildable because that requires 1 acre, 1 net acre to construct a single family dwelling. In our review of this request, we found that the A1 agricultural district and really that 35 acre minimum size to build a dwelling is really tailored towards high value, large agricultural parcels, and this is not that. It's low value, it's 4 acres, it's never been in agricultural use. It has the lowest production value of any of the adjacent parcels. So we found the AR district and the request to rezone would be compatible, more compatible with the AR district zoning. And I will also note that the AR district is considered compatible with the future land use plan, our C2C Story County Cornerstone to Capstone plan. So here's the location. It is down here in the southeastern corner of Nevada Township. Here's Nevada over here. It's about 4 miles, maybe more, from Nevada. Looking at the zoning and surrounding land use, this is the zoning map. It's A1 Agricultural, and it's within 1 mile. So 95% of the land use within 1 mile is agricultural. 3% are for these agricultural-type dwellings and agricultural use. 1% is just residential, so properties that might not have agricultural production on them but have a dwelling. And 1% is commercial, and I actually believe that is the Story County Conservation-owned property that is adjacent to this subject property. Looking at the parcels adjacent to the subject property, which is here, the property just directly to the east has a single-family dwelling on it. And 6 of the 7 adjacent parcels, with the exception of this one to the north, which is Story County Conservation owned, it's a preserve, have a portion of the parcel in agricultural use. So this is the C2C planned future land use map. You can see that it is designated as an agricultural conservation area with a natural resource area overlay. I've also shown the floodplain on this map to show you how that is also in the natural resource area. All adjacent parcels are designated in this manner as well, with the natural resource areas overlaying the floodplain. That's related to a branch off of Indian Creek. And this is closer up the proposed rezoning area. So, again, the rezoning is for the entire parcel. This is the approximate conservation easement area. The applicant will have that surveyed. And this is the potential dwelling location that the applicant suggested, maybe in this area. Again, this conservation easement area is about 2.5 gross acres, and this is about 3 gross acres.
What's the red one?
The red one would be the proposed conservation easement area, so all the way up here. And that corresponds with the floodplain area and the natural resource area designation, as well as the woodlands that are on the property. It kind of follows that. So a little more background. This parcel was created in 1979. It was split across 670th with the parcel adjacent to the east. It's been zoned A1 agricultural since we adopted zoning in 1958. Again, it's not an agricultural production, and it mainly contains woodlands that are connected to the natural areas that are part of the Gladys Lou Preserve, located adjacent to the north, and the greater Indian Creek watershed. There are 3 accessory structures on the property currently, one of which the applicant has indicated is used as a camping shelter in the past. The primary classification for the parcel is agricultural dwelling, so the assessor has indicated that that camping shelter is a single-family dwelling. We have a permit on record for the construction of the accessory building, but we don't have records of a conversion. But that's really... you can't have two, as Aaron said earlier, you can't have 2 houses on one parcel, so it's kind of an aside from the proposal. Yes.
Construction. Can you describe it?
Yes, I have pictures as well. So it's a small accessory building. We have a permit for a garage on record to construct it. But the assessors indicated that it's a single-family dwelling. So, but that would be... if it is a single-family dwelling, indeed, you cannot have 2 on one parcel and would be removed or required to be used as a garage. If a new one, it would be constructed. So I wanted to go through the 35 minimum acre lot size requirement, the exceptions to that requirement, to show you what staff looked at when we reviewed if this parcel was buildable or not, as it's currently zoned. So there's 4 exceptions. One is if it's considered a legally established lot of record. So was the parcel buildable when it was created? 2 is if the parcel contains a farmstead, then that farmstead would be divisible. It does not contain a farmstead. We also have the LISA score exception, the land evaluation and site assessment exception. Staff does an assessment and calculates a score, and if it's under a certain score, then you can build on it, and if it's over, you can't. And finally, if the parcel has been created through a residential parcel subdivision. So it did not meet these exceptions. And a previous owner also applied for a variance to the 35-acre minimum lot size standard, which was denied. So here we are at the the rezoning request to allow for the dwelling to be built through rezoning it to the AR district to have a smaller minimum lot size. I also, the conservation easement, that has been conceptually approved by the Story County Conservation Board. If the rezoning is approved, that would have final approval with their board.
The intent is to grant the easement to Story County Conservation.
So, yes, they would still own the property, but there would be an easement that goes through what uses are permitted. Story County Conservation has approval over certain uses. It's a pretty restrictive easement. Story County Conservation and staff feels that this easement would enhance the conservation value of the preserve. The preserve includes a prairie as well as woodlands that are like what's on the property. The preserve, it's a preserve. It's not necessarily, there's no public recreation improvements. It has intrinsic value just in existing and being connected to this greater watershed system. There is a parking area on the site, but again, there's no public trails, no public hunting. It's a preserve.
On the east of the north.
Yes. So here's the picture. This is the Gladys Lou Preserve to the north, this heavily wooded area. There's a little prairie area in here, and the subject property is located to the south. So here's the branch off of the Indian Creek that it's connected to. And so then this is the greater watershed area I wanted to show you as well. So here's the subject property and the Gladys Lou Reserve. Here's that little branch that we see here. And then here's the greater Indian Creek watershed. So it's a pretty large area that it connects to. We're going to look at some site photos now. So this is the garage / converted camping shelter. This is looking northeast from the subject property. We can actually see the adjacent property, and the dwelling is back in these trees back here. This is looking northeast from the subject property along 670th as it curves. This is looking south from the subject property. There is an existing drive, and this is an agricultural field to the south. This is looking southwest along 670th. This is another one of the accessory buildings. And this is a third accessory building. These are all located north of that first accessory building we saw. And then here's kind of the conservation easement area. You can see it's wooded. And here's looking west at the parking area and the Gladys Lou Preserve Prairie and then the woodlands behind that. So we're going to go through the standards of approval for the rezoning now. The first standard of approval is that the proposed rezoning shall conform to the Story County C2C plan. So I included our zoning compatibility matrix from the C2C plan for the different future land use designations on this slide. So here we have the agricultural conservation area designation. You can see it's listed as compatible with A1, A2, and AR zoning. We also have natural resource area located in the property. That is compatible with the Greenbelt Conservation Overlay. Sorry, zoning districts and the residential conservation overlay. We'll get into that compatibility in a second here. But for the agricultural conservation designation, it's summarized in the C2C plan as large areas encompassing high-value farmland with agriculture and agricultural production as the primary activity. And staff feels that none of these things are the case on the subject property. I've included a map of the crop suitability rating or the site value of the property. So it's 58. The Gladys Lou Preserve is 60. Surrounding properties, we have an 89 value, an 81. This one's 63. It also has some woodlands located on it. But it also has accessory structures related to a farming operation and a little bit of ag row crop production in this corner. You can see otherwise in the surrounding area, there's many parcels that have values in the 80s and 90s on this scale of site values.
Higher the number, the better.
Yeah, sorry, the higher number, the better. So when we're looking at does this rezoning requests meet the principles for the agricultural conservation area. These principles include conserving agricultural land, encouraging high-value agricultural lands to remain as agricultural. It meets these because we're not taking any ag land out of production. It's never been in production. It's not high-value land. It also meets Principle 4 for the agricultural conservation area, which is limiting development conflicts between ag uses and rural residences and other type of land uses. Again, not taking any agriculture out of production here. And we do have that conservation easement to protect the natural areas on the property. So now looking at the natural resource area designation, that's summarized as natural areas, floodplains, green spaces, and parks that help create open space linkages between the countryside and communities. There are several principles associated with this land use designation. But Principle 3 is what I wanted to talk about mainly, and that is consider areas identified as natural resource areas for inclusion in the Greenbelt Conservation District of the Land Development Regulations and or take necessary steps to ensure resource conservation through other mechanisms. So if you recall that zoning compatibility matrix, it showed that the natural resource areas were compatible with Greenbelt Conservation and residential conservation overlay. This principle is telling us if we're not going to put it in Greenbelt Conservation District, then we need to take steps to have other mechanisms in place. The conservation easement that's proposed is one of these mechanisms. We actually reviewed, you know, what uses are permitted in the Greenbelt Conservation District and found that this conservation easement is more restrictive than that zoning. Some of the permitted uses include agriculture, truck guarding, nurseries, livestock grazing, and, of course, wildlife preserves, other conservation activities. But the proposed conservation easement does not promote development, agricultural production, and really limits it to low-impact recreation. And the easement also allows Story County Conservation Board to approve certain uses if anything was proposed. So we feel that Principle 3 has been met, that other mechanisms are in place to protect this natural area. So moving into the second standard, the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent for the proposed district. That statement of intent is for the AR Agricultural District is to, it's a residential district designed to provide for single-family detached dwellings with limited activities interrelated with agricultural uses at a rural density. Community facilities and open space uses that serve residents may also be included in the layout of subdivisions within this district with special provisions to protect the rural residential character of the district. This district is not intended to permit isolated rural dwellings incompatible with surrounding land uses and not in conformance with the Story County Development Plan. So looking at that last statement about the intent is not to allow isolated dwellings, not compatible with our development plan. I will point out again, there is a single-family dwelling adjacent to the east. We looked at what adjacent parcels were buildable, meeting that 35-acre minimum lot size requirement or had a farmstead on them. We found that two were to be considered buildable, looking at those exceptions to the 35-acre minimum lot size. There's two that are buildable of the seven adjacent parcels. There's one with a house. The other ones is, of course, the Gladys Lou Preserve. And then we have these three other ones. There's two parcels that are in agricultural row crops to the south that are adjacent. And then this one has accessory buildings related to farming operation and the single-family dwelling. It's owned by the same person. So these other parcels are all in a use. They're all in a productive use. So we found that the zoning would not be incompatible with the surrounding land uses, especially because of this conservation easement. And it wouldn't be creating an isolated rural dwelling. There is one adjacent. We also did some further research on the parcels that are zoned agricultural residential in the county. How are those configured? There are 474. 401 or 84% are located in subdivisions. 65 are not part of a subdivision, but are adjacent to other AR district parcels. And so there are 8 parcels that are zoned AR and not adjacent to other parcels in the AR district, like this one would be. And so of those 8 parcels, 5 were rezoned with the intent to allow further divisions of the parcels, and those divisions did not occur. That's not the case here. There's no intent to further divide the parcel, as expressed by the applicant. There are also 2 parcels that were downzoned from the R1 or R2 zoning district into the AR district to allow for horses on the property. And then there was 1 parcel that was rezoned to the AR district because it had a 100-year-old home on it and had been zoned commercial. And so while the parcel does not necessarily fit one of these scenarios, again, given the high conservation value and low agricultural value, we feel that the proposed rezoning request would allow for the most productive use of the parcel and would be compatible with the AR district. The third standard is that, again, the rezoning shall be compatible. So just a few bullet points. I know we've gone over these ones before. Adjacent parcels to the east has an existing single-family dwelling. 2 of the 7 adjacent parcels are buildable. There's a conservation easement in place to protect the natural area to the north, and no agricultural land will be taken out of production. 4th, this standard is that if there's natural resource on the property and there's more than 50% of the property in natural resources areas, basically that we request a more restrictive designation like the RC residential conservation design overlay, or have conditions protecting the identified areas attached to the rezoning request. So again, this is the case on this parcel. We found 52.17% of the gross area of the property was a natural resource area, so we are recommending a condition be attached to the rezoning that easement, that conservation easement's approval and implementation be completed before we can confirm that it's rezoned or have that become in effect. And finally, the 5th standard has to do with rezonings from A1 agricultural to other districts. We have a threshold for the LISA score that they have to meet. As you remember from before, the LISA threshold for a buildable parcel, this is a different threshold. So there's 2 scores that you have to meet to make it a buildable parcel. In this case, there's only 1 score to rezone it, and it does meet that threshold to rezone. So the LISA score is 251, and the LISA score threshold is 267. So if you're under that threshold, then you meet this standard, which in this case it is. Here are some comments from the interagency review team. Basically just that the assessor's office will review improvements. Story County Environmental Health will need a septic system permit and will review the well location. It might need to be plugged. The Story County engineer commented that any new driveways will require a permit. The site distance could be an issue near the curve, but that existing driveway does seem to be the best location for the drive. And we just had some comments about if we were rezoning the whole parcel or just a section, when a survey would be required. But the request is for the whole parcel. We've sent notice letters to the public on the 24th. We had a legal notice published in the Ames Tribune, as well as other county newspapers. And we had a development proposed sign placed on the parcel. And we have received no comments. So again, here is the condition of approval. We recommend approval, conditional approval of the rezoning with the condition that the conservation easement's approval and recordation be completed prior to the rezoning taking effect. So this is our recommendation in line with our analysis. And our analysis is, again, just that the parcel is not of high agricultural value or in production. Allowing the rezoning to the AR district with that accompanying conservation easement would allow for a more productive use of the parcel. This is really a unique case, is the second point. the subject property has a really low site value. You know, 6 of the 7 adjacent parcels have some portion in agriculture. This one never has. And the parcel is kind of incompatible with its current zoning district, given those characteristics. We also commented that the conservation easement makes this a unique case, in that the conservation allows this rezoning to be more compatible with the use to the north of that preserve area. But it also ensures that we're enhancing a public good here, the Gladys Lou Preserve and the greater Indian Creek watershed, so that the rezoning would benefit more than just the property owner. Finally, the proposed use conforms with the statement of intent for the AR district. It also conforms with the C2C plan. So we recommend alternative 2, a conditional rezoning. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, Amelia, I'm curious. You had mentioned that previously the previous property owner had asked for a variance.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why that wasn't approved?
Yes, I do. I have a quote. Hold on one second. let's see here. The Board of Adjustment denied the appeal, citing that it does not meet the spirit of the zoning ordinance in that the tract was originally created in nonconformance to the ordinance, and in implying LISA, the tract is still not in conformance with the ordinance for the purpose of constructing a single-family dwelling.
And what year was that?
Huh?
What year was that?
1990.
Can you go back to the photos?
Yeah.
I'd like to focus on the buildings that are on the site.
Okay.
So that's the camping cabin?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then that's an accessory building?
Right.
It,
accessory structure 1.
It was permitted as an accessory structure.
That's a garage.
It was built in?
81. Mm-hmm.
And the ordinance was adopted... I mean,
the parcel was created?
In 79.
All the regular, the 35-acre minimum lot size and all the exceptions to it were created. Okay. That's all right. And the assessor's office has always recognized this as a dwelling. They've called this a dwelling.
Currently do.
Yes.
Okay, then what's the next one?
This is a shed.
A shed, okay. And then the next one?
Shed.
And this is located which direction?
North.
This is on the property.
Mm-hmm. And it's not in the conservation easement area. Okay. None of these are.
And this building obviously is way before, I mean, pre-zoning code, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I have a date on that one. You could ask the owner.
That's either a house or a barn. So when you say it's never been in agricultural use, you're saying specifically row crop production?
Correct.
Okay.
So we looked at historic aerial photos. It's always been this wooded.
Yeah. Probably pastured at one point. And there, if there's a barn there, it was used in. It was used for some agricultural capacity.
You looked at aerials, didn't sort of pick up on anything.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
There's one in the staff report from the 50s. Mm-hmm.
Well, it could be used for adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the point I'm getting at is how much evidence do you need that this was a farmstead at one point? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's no other evidence of it. There's no foundation. There's a well.
It says something in the history.
So it was connected with, let me show you. So the farmstead is on the parcel adjacent to the east. You can kind of see it.
You're saying these?
I'm saying these two parcels were connected in 1978, and then they were split in 79, and this is a farmstead.
So you're saying that could just be remnants of the one farmstead that were lopped off and fell off?
Not knowing the date when it was created, maybe.
Okay.
We do have for a farmstead specific criteria that they have to meet in the code, like a certain percentage of the foundation, evidence of a dwelling and accessory structures, some aerial imagery or assessor's records.
But the loose collection of things, it's not like it has to meet. It's a judgment call, basically. Mm-hmm. Just looking for enough evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And a farmstead is designed, described as having evidence of a dwelling at some point associated with a farming operation.
Right.
Yes.
A windbreak, okay. Accessory.
So the barn itself isn't enough because there might have been a barn over on that piece, but the farm was over on this.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a farmstead? It can be separated?
Yeah, it just looks like a farmstead to me. It doesn't need a rezoning to be divided, to be built on.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to separate a farmstead from a farm. You create it, and it's not been created as a farmstead.
Well, it was when this 4.72 acre piece was divided.
Mm-hmm.
If it was included the mm-hmm. farm buildings.
I guess, Aaron, so the specifically part of the farmstead, the dwelling, it has to be constructed pre-1977.
Right. So the camping cabin doesn't count, but I'm still wondering about evidence of an older house, and there's
right.
not one.
No.
Okay. Then my next question is, what was the LISA score on this piece?
The 251 total. And
you got to get below what?
So for it to be buildable, the SA score was 193. The LESA score was 251. The threshold for it to be buildable is an SA score of 172 or less and a LESA score of 266 or less. So it meets the LESA score threshold. It does not meet the SA score threshold. And the SA score is based on the
LESA has two components. It has an overall score, but it has a subcomponent of the site assessment.
Yes.
And it's got to meet the site assessment criteria and the overall score.
So the site assessment
was the issue.
Yes.
And what was the difference again?
193 versus 172, so 21 points. And it's because it's located, approximately 4 miles from any city.
The remoteness. Sorry.
Yes, the remoteness, not the site value.
But when you bet those numbers, you said 4. You didn't say and, you said 4. Is that what you say? That's what I'm saying. You just have to meet one.
Oh, I said SA score of 172 or less and LESA score of 266 or less. Just meet both.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so with the rezoning, you only have to meet the LESA score, the overall score.
How many acres is this property total?
It's the legal description points to it as 5.53 acres gross.
Okay. How did the house get built in the first place? It was over 5.53 acres.
What house?
We have approved permit for a garage.
Well,
I thought there was a house on it. There's no house at all.
According to our department, we have a zoning permit that was issued for an accessory structure, and that's that first building that she showed you.
So is that occupied now?
The applicant indicated that it's just a camping shelter for occasional use. They have a full-time residence elsewhere in Ames.
Is there a septic system?
No.
I don't find her. There's a guy in the yard who waved at me.
We did a site review.
Mm-hmm.
There was
no one
there.
No one there.
Mm-hmm. There's somebody there.
Okay.
It's pretty kind of not on the same page as whether it's a house or not.
Story count. There's different departments.
There's different,
that,
yeah.
Different pages.
Uh-huh. My department permitted it as an accessory dwelling.
Right.
And one has to ask if it's an accessory dwelling, mm-hmm. accessory to what?
Right. And so.
Which makes me ask again. Was there, or, wondering again. If there
right.
Was there a house?
We never found evidence of a house.
Accessory to the garden.
I found the definition of dwelling interesting. any building or a portion thereof which is designed and used exclusively for residential purposes, but not including a tent, cabin, trailer, or mobile home park, is part of the definition.
Okay. And this one wouldn't be old enough to meet the exception, the farmstead exception anyway.
No.
And this stage with this reason.
Right.
So, look at the zoning map. Wouldn't this kind of look like spot zoning?
Mm-hmm. And so we considered that. And in looking at spot zonings, you know, AR district, it is compatible with that C2C plan designation. We thought it was unique enough in the low agricultural value, and we also thought the conservation easement meant it wasn't just benefiting the property owner, it's benefiting Story County Conservations. So, mm-hmm. We did, yes.
You kind of have more problems with this if there wasn't a conservation.
I think we would too, and that's what makes this unique, and other cases that would come forward without this kind of uniqueness not go.
Like spot zoning.
Yeah.
Kind of
right. And that's why we looked at individual AR zoned parcels, those eight other parcels that are kind of isolated and zoned AR, ag residential, and how they got that way.
It's not the only one.
There's eight like that.
Are there, you mean in the county?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But if you looked at the context of this area.
Yes.
In the township.
Yeah. Are there any other pieces of information you'd like from the staff before we hear from the applicant? Okay. It's easy to get going on the conversation, especially on an interesting one like this. Okay, if not, would the applicant mind stepping up and giving us your name and address for the record?
Certainly. Ryan Holland with the Davis Brown Law Firm. We're over in Ames 2605 North Ridge Parkway. I'll try to be brief. I joked with my client about that. They didn't believe I was capable of doing that. But a couple of things I want to hit on. One, the dwelling garage thing. Okay. So, Mr. Steele, I'm with you, and Nancy Donaldson has done... she is essentially a historian of this site at this point, going back to 1923, scouring records, even newspaper clippings, having even spoken with a former resident of the area, trying to determine whether there was ever a house on this parcel. When Lauren and Nancy first came to meet with me, I said, well, let's discover that first, and then we can maybe avoid some of the seller stuff. I'm with you. I wish we could relax some of the perhaps requirements for what it takes to have an established dwelling as a farmstead for one of those exceptions. We didn't find anything. There's no foundation. There are those accessory buildings. There was a lady who said she thought there had been a dwelling there at some point, but going back to 1923, it's anybody's guess. That garage, and I'll continue to call it a garage, was permitted in 1981 prior to Lauren and Nancy purchasing the property. It truly is a camping shelter. Both Lauren and Nancy live on Stonebrook Road in Ames. Their son Joseph has his own residence. No one is living there. They do spend a lot of time out there, partially for the conservation purposes. Anyone who lives out in the country knows that honeysuckle remediation is a full-time job, so they are out there all the time. So it wouldn't surprise me if you drove by at any point during the summer and you'd see either Lauren, Nancy, or Joseph. But it is a garage. It will be treated as either a garage or a workshop, assuming the rezone goes through. There's no intent to have this be a granny flat and then have a second home or anything like that. The second thing I wanted to hit on was just the agricultural value. You know, it's CSR rated at 58. If I had a client come to me that had some ground CSR 58 and said, what should I do? I'd say, well, try to put it in CRP. They probably won't accept it. So put up a deer stand, because that's about all you're going to do with ground at that rating level. It's just not usable in any real sense for row crop. And part of that as well is the topography. Everything on this parcel runs down into that ravine. The slide that Amelia showed with the easement area and the building footprint, the reason the building footprint looks so weird is because there's only a few places where you're going to be able to build on this parcel while complying with setbacks, for lot lines while complying with septic setbacks and all that sort of thing, you can see everything else sort of just runs down. So the value of this land is not great. Three is the unique nature of this rezone request. I want to stress that the conservation easement is not, a one- or two-page document that we've slapped together. We've worked with Story County Conservation. We've met several times with Mike Cox. It has been reviewed by your assistant county attorney, Ethan Anderson. It's been conceptually approved. It's a 15-page easement document. Okay, so it's not something that is just slapped together that is going to cause problems. And if anything, like we said in our application, we think the rezone is a net benefit. Not taking anything out of agricultural production, you're boosting the property tax rate here a little bit for what that's worth, and then you're putting this property into a perpetual conservation easement. And as it is right now, I don't think anybody is really benefiting from this parcel. I think the taxes are like $150 a year or something like that. It can be used for camping. But other than that, what we are requesting would take the parcel from essentially no use to a net positive use. Just real briefly, going back to the assessment, and I don't know, we talked about this at our conceptual review. We had a copy of a 2003 assessment that showed it was being assessed as a single-family dwelling, but had the date of the construction as 1900. And so who knows how or when or why the staff member in the assessor's department on that given day decides what is a dwelling versus not. Granted, there are windows and drapes, so it doesn't look like a garage, so I understand that. But I'm always cautious about having my clients rely on what they see on the assessor's website as being gospel truth, so I would caution all of us as well. Mainly, though, I wanted to stress the unique nature of this thing and the conservation easement being a robust document that would benefit not only the county, but is going to be something that no matter who owns it in the future, that is going to be conservation area. So with that, though, if there are questions from any of you folks, I'd be happy to answer those.
That doesn't mean we won't have any.
Fair enough.
The only thing I do, I'm sure the question is for. So this is about a 5-acre piece of land. Mm-hmm. At some point, it was attached to some other land. And that's that. What is it?
So it was split in 1975 from this piece here.
How many acres is that?
Oh, 8 to 10, yeah. 7?
Anything before that?
This piece up here was a separate farmstead than this farmstead down here when we're looking at aerial photos from the 30s. And this whole piece, it was a crazy configuration. The preserve was attached to it at some point, too.
So the part you're saying was the farmstead is southern half. Where was the house?
The house is here.
Okay, so on the other side of the road.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's how there's a house on that parcel today.
But that was still less than 37 acres. That's pre-zoning ordinance.
Well, it's a farmstead exception to the 35-acre standard. The parcel to the east with the dwelling on it. So we found aerial footage.
But at some point, it had to be a large piece of land to get a house on it, unless it was pre-zoning ordinance.
Oh, right. So there's aerial images back to the 30s. Sorry, I didn't understand the question. With that house on there. Or a house on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter because there was no zoning ordinance that said what you do or not do.
1956.
Right, 58.
Well, and if the house had burned down, it was still zoned A1 today, though someone would be able to build on that parcel because it was a farmstead.
Right.
Correct.
And like Mr. Steele pointed out, if we had found a foundation, we wouldn't be here this afternoon. So.
Any other questions for the applicant? Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
Anyone like to speak on this issue? Then commission discussion. I think, you know, we had, to me, it looks everything like a farmstead, and I'm sure this has been thoroughly vetted, otherwise we wouldn't be here. But the thing you have to be careful about is that was connected to the property across the road that did have a farmstead house, and how do we know it wasn't just a barn that was left over from that? So I can't, the lease still baffles me, but I'm not wild about the 35-acre minimum lot size to begin with and the network or the webbing of exceptions you have to work through. My only qualms about this, though, is where the next applicant in the neighborhood applying for a rezoning to AR, you know.
Can I speak to that just real quick?
Yeah, please.
Thank you very much. Yeah. So this is, I first talked to Jerry about this
4 or 5 months ago. And, of course, what I told my client was the question that you're going to get from planning, from the commission, and from the board of supervisors is, well, what's to stop the next guy from coming along and saying,
really good, is that what you're saying?
Yes, yeah. So I think what stops the next person, well, nothing's going to stop the next person from asking. You all get to determine whether that's a yes or no. But is the size of the parcel, the fact that the rezone for development is for a single-family dwelling, not for, you know, a subdivision plopped down in the middle of high-value agricultural property, and the fact that there's a conservation easement, not even that it's going to benefit the county, but simply that the commission and whomever else is concerned can be certain that nothing is going to change. That can't be changed unless the county said at some point, we don't want it. So if you say, well, what's to stop the next guy? Well, okay, they're putting half of their property into a conservation easement. Are you willing to do that same thing? Are you willing to undertake that cost ahead of time and into perpetuity say, you can't do anything with this tract of property? And in my experience, I've done dozens of conservation easements, and they have all been for clients who are essentially gifting property that they're not ever going to use, right? Even when it's a quasi-agricultural situation, I mean, it would be rare for someone to give up half of their parcel when it's not just an outright gift. I think that by itself changes, you know, the slippery slope argument gets cut off there. And just by the unique nature of this parcel, where it sits, you know, put it a mile and a half to the northwest, and these guys do this stuff every day, I don't, but the LISA score would not be 251. When I saw the LISA score, I mean, I was pretty puzzled, but like I told my client, the location is such a weighted factor, and when it is sort of a hub in the spokes of Nevada, Colo, Collins, Baxter, and it's equidistant from each of those places, I mean, that ends up being, I would think, a big factor in the LISA score. So put it a mile in any different direction, and you end up with a much lower LISA score, and then I think the analysis is also a little bit different. But the main thing is this conservation easement and the permanent nature of that would be make this a unique case for anybody else coming along asking for the same thing.
Thanks.
Could I ask a question? A previous owner applied for variance in 1990. How long have your clients owned the property, and what was their intent when they bought it?
22 years. I want to be clear, though, about the previous owners applied for a variance.
Yeah.
They didn't request a rezone. I mean, we're talking about two different things. And when Lauren and Nancy came to me, I mean, their goal has always been to build on the parcel. I don't know anyone who just buys 5 acres to look at, at least not anyone in our tax brackets. But the variance and the rezone is a different animal. When they came to me, I said, well, other people have tried, but we are going to do all the work ahead of time, and we're going to sort of go about the right way. The impression that I got was each previous landowner had basically filled out the application, said, hey, we want a variance. Well, why? Well, because we want to build there. And the quote that it not being in the spirit of the ordinance is because it was a non-complying parcel to begin with. So you can see where the Board of Adjustment would say, well, you've created this non-complying parcel by not going through the adequate steps, and now you're just going to ask for an exception. That would not be in keeping with the spirit of the ordinance, but that's not what we're doing here, because we're going through, we're effectively retroactively going through the proper steps to get in front of you all, to get in front of the Board of Supervisors, asking that the property be zoned adequately. I mean, if this had been, if it was 2009 and this split was going on for the first time, we would be doing what you saw the previous applicants this afternoon. We'd be asking for a minor subdivision or a major subdivision, and we would have to check boxes and get approval. And so we're just doing that retroactively. That's a much different procedure than simply saying, hey, we have this lot, we'd like you to, you know, to do us a solid and let us build a house here.
With those adjacent parcels being productive farm ground, if we did get an application, you can be assured that from the staff's perspective, we would have to support that. It doesn't mean that we won't get interest in it, but it wouldn't be in support of it.
So one of the problems with the lease store, which connects back to some of my uncertainty about the 35 acres in the last size, is that lease scores of adjacent of nearby parcels will now be, if the rezoning is approved, will now be affected by the fact that there's a spot of AR zoning in the neighborhood. Okay? Now, it may not be a huge difference in points, but it does happen. And that's one of the problems, I think, with the lease scoring, is that it evolves all the time.
Right.
And it can theoretically be manipulated. So when we allow a little spot of AR zoning in amongst, like you said, all this productive farmland, mm-hmm. we're affecting the lease scores, all the other parcels in the neighborhood.
So I will say, these two adjacent parcels have crop suitability ratings, so the site value scores of 94 and 85.
Right.
Which would mean...
So you see where that 77 is right there?
Yeah.
Just to the west?
I think that meets the... Maybe it doesn't. 35 acre. I can look at the map I showed earlier.
Or any 40 acre piece there.
Mm-hmm.
What I would do is, as soon as this gets rezoned, I would go and subdivide a 2-acre parcel right on that corner, because it is now directly adjacent to AR zoning. And by making it 2 acres, I've effectively said it's no longer productive for agriculture by manipulating the parcel, its size, which affects the scoring. So you...
Well, you wouldn't take high CSR crop ground out of production. I mean, if you're the owner, then you wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a net negative.
Well, that's why the 35-acre lot size exists, because people do. Mm-hmm. They do take a 1-acre chunk out of this corner or a 2-acre chunk there.
Right.
So all I'm saying is we can't just say mm-hmm. we'll just put down this little spot of zoning and it will never affect anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It does immediately.
Right. And I will say, if this, so let's say the one of these parcels, lease score is affected, having an adjacent dwelling and having adjacent zoning that's not A1 agricultural will combine for a total of 2 points taken off of the lease score. So, and then you'd multiply those by 3, maybe? So maybe 12 points. But if this one, you know, with the site assessment value is over the threshold...
I'm talking too much, but I just want to say one more thing on the issue of spot zoning. It does look like illegal spot zoning at first blush, mm-hmm. but spot zoning is not illegal if it conforms to the overall plan.
So I think one of the decisions we have to make is there enough contribution toward the overall objectives of the plan that we can overlook the fact that this is not typical, that it's not just dropping it somewhere where it doesn't completely fall.
This piece of land is never going to be used for agriculture. I think that's really one important thing, because the intent of the new source is looking at agricultural use. And this land is not going to be used for agriculture. There may be, I'm just thinking, got a conservation area here, and that's adjacent to it. Part of that's a conservation easement that, in some way, protects the conservation area.
I might suggest, though, that so you kind of said agricultural preservation goals go farther than just is this land going to be used for agriculture, but also if it's used for something else, does it interfere with agriculture in the area? So if you keep putting more residences out there that just drive the town in the back of your day, and you're trying to get combines down roads, does it interfere with agriculture, even though you're not using a good black soil for your house? Something.
It could be a horse stable, which would be a permitted use.
Yeah.
You could have,
yeah.
How many horses could you keep on that site? Quite a few, and that would
triple,
quadruple.
It could be a bed and breakfast.
The camping shelter.
It could be a bed and breakfast.
So these are small incremental things, but they are all components of the plan and the regulations that we have in place.
One of the things that's on the work program, I'm always talking about things that we need to do, but that's one of the things I'm going to look at is the LISA system.
I would like to learn more about that.
So we've got two tutorials.
All of my talking may have led you to believe that I'm opposed to this application. Philosophically, there's a lot to deal with here, though, if you want to protect the integrity of the plant. So,
this is a unique situation, as has been pointed out by staff. And so, of course, I have my own reservations, but at the same time, as a human being's understanding of other human beings' plight, the fact that this piece of property is owned by someone and maybe it's not useful, I guess, in a certain regard as it is, makes me empathetic to that particular situation. I mean, it's great to own land for the sake of owning land, but and their willingness to turn half that over into conservation land.
Well, when one buys land, they are sure to be cognizant of the present zoning.
Right.
And so, that should be a consideration when you buy land.
I'm a real estate attorney, and I can tell you, you are assuming too much, Mr. Shirley.
Okay.
Knowing that it's A1, most people walk in my office. If I said, "What can you do with that?" They would have no idea, zero idea, other than what I've been informed. So it's something that if you visited my office before you bought the parcel, then certainly you would know. But I don't think that even remotely close to how most folks go through, or everybody thinks they can do it better the next time around. So,
as far as your questions go, I found something in my life that's always annoying me. That's what someone will say. Ask any question you want. Ask any question. Well, I don't even know what the questions are a lot of the time. So I appreciate when you come up with your what-ifs. So, and then you realize sometimes you need to cut them off. But I like the fact that as a part of my education,
I was going to ask if you appreciated it at 9 o'clock.
No.
Yeah. any other discussion or any motions to mind?
I don't believe
it. What would you like us to vote on, PJ?
I don't know how to word it, so you guys figure it out.
Right. I'll make a motion to approve staff recommendations for this particular case.
I'll second it.
Very good.
Don't give me a hard time.
We have
a... You're rolling your eyes like teenagers.
We have a motion by Sherwin and a second by McBride to go with staff's recommendation for approval. Is there any discussion on the motion? Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Sherwin.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
Holstrom.
Yes.
Motion carries. You'll move on to the Board of Supervisors, correct?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Very good. Thanks. All right. We're on to staff comments.
All right.
Hello. I wanted to bring up that this week is Haley's last week, our intern, so you cannot leave. So this is the last time you're going to see her. She's been a great help to our department. She's worked on a ton of things. She's done several development cases. She helped update our zoning map. She's done a lot of inspections with both our planning staff. She's gone to Ames Urban Fringe plan meetings. So she's been actively involved, helping with doing a lot of research on ordinances and things. So she's going to be greatly missed. But her last day is Friday, and then she's going off to Iowa State to get her undergrad degree in planning. So
cool.
She will be missed. So thank you, Haley. You want to say anything to anybody? Or?
I just wanted to say I went to this internship not knowing where I want to get my hands on, but I've done way more than I thought I would. I'm very thankful that I've been exposed.
That's the great thing about our internship program in our department. We hire them when we're busiest, and so, you know, it's not just come and twiddle your thumbs and talk to a few people in the hallway. It's there. We put them to work, and we have a lot of expectations for our planners. But when they leave our department, they've got a lot of valuable experience, and that's our goal. So thank you, Haley. YSS, the conditional use permit appeal, got extended again. There's a hearing that was scheduled. It's been scheduled a couple times. It got just deferred again, and we're trying to figure out why, but it got scheduled or rescheduled till August 28th. I'm still trying to find out why, and I'll let you know about the outcome of that. We're hoping to have some ordinances that address the processes that we go through to review variances, conditional uses, doing text amendments, you know, our notification process, review process. We're hoping to have something to you in September to look at. We're going through and looking at our stormwater drainage ordinance. We're trying to tweak that so that we've got a little more teeth in it. Right now, non-residential applications are required to meet the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual and the SUDIS requirements for erosion control. But it doesn't really give a lot of direction, and so we're trying to provide more direction, trying to get some documentation that we actually review and provide input on. I think a lot of this came about because of some of the issues that we've had recently in a development northwest of Ames. But again, the goal is to try to have something to you on that September or October. And then Fernald, we were to assess the needs of Fernald citizens. We had our initial meeting in May. A lot of the issues that they raised, we were able to address administratively. Some of those things are ongoing, like the dilapidation of buildings. We just worked on a notice of violation the last couple of days. There's a property owner that's storing like split logs, and they're being kept in the right of way. So we're assisting with the engineering division on that one. But of all of the comments that we received, probably the biggest issue, the biggest concern is concerns with the stormwater drainage. It's a very flat area. It's a part of two drainage districts. And there's a main tile system that goes through this Burb village. And it was constructed in 1920. So according to our engineer, the design standard that it was designed by is that it's supposed to handle like 1/8 inch rainfalls in a 24-hour time period. And so while it works, it's not moving the water away quick enough for our higher rainfall events. So part of what we're trying to get a handle on is different funding mechanisms to study it, the existing system and that whole area. We're looking at local opportunities, state, federal, possibly seeing if maybe Iowa State University through their engineering program can provide some assistance. But we've been working close with engineering division on this. And again, we'd like to get something to you on that. Hopefully September, no later than October. Again, that's a work program item. Construction and demolition has many, many aspects to it. We are to find some locations in the county in case we have a disaster, whether it be flood-related, tornadoes, such that we can process materials from various areas that are being impacted by a disaster. And we had a really good discussion, and you can pop up here if you want to add to anything I'm saying, but we had a really good discussion with the landfill operator in Cedar Rapids, or the county that Cedar Rapids is in. She provided us a wealth of information, gave us a list of contractors that they use, and my gosh, there's probably 50 contractors. So we're trying to get some information from these contractors, what services they provide, you know, their experience levels, before we get to a point where we're actually seeking out RFP or RFQs. What else about that can we add?
We did site visits a couple weeks ago. We looked at the sites that we had selected and were able to cross them off, actually, and find some that were actually good.
Yeah, on paved roads, county roads, good access.
Mm-hmm. There was one we were driving to, and Jerry and I were just like, oh, maybe we should turn around at this point. This isn't going to work.
It was too far off the major road on gravel,
yeah.
And that would probably not work, because what we've learned in talking to different cities and unincorporated areas is these things, you know, major disasters, it's not something that's going to be addressed within a few days or in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. It's a several month process. One of the things that we're really trying to nail down, though, is what the DNR is going to require for us before we can actually leave that site. You know, what are the specific criteria? We've done a really good job. Amelia's done a good job of trying to identify places that are not in a floodplain. They don't have natural resources. They are on paved roads. They're away from areas that are habitated by daycares and different things like that. So we think we've got some really good candidate sites. We're still working on ordinances, because we have to make it real clear, if we have a disaster, what the citizens are supposed to do. And we're told frequently that it's got to be, the materials have to be brought and separated, and they have to be brought to the right of way. Otherwise, we're not going to be get reimbursed, which is what this is all about. We want to be able to get reimbursed by FEMA. So there's a lot of aspects to this that are ongoing.
Is that coming from the hazard mitigation plan?
Ours?
This whole process of identifying.
Yeah, so the Story County, yeah. We have a debris management plan that directs us to do this, yes.
Which is really kind of where it all started.
Yeah.
And through the Emergency Management Division. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually helping that department with this goal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in case the landfill in Boone gets inundated and they're not able to take in the material. We've got places that we can have materials brought to, that we can sort and deal with.
First, the resident will put it out in the bottom room, separate it out. And then there will be some kind of process of bringing that to the
Right. We would have contractors that would bring it as a first choice, but then we want to be able to allow people to maybe bring stuff their own or hire people to do that as well. But
so is the county looking for land to purchase, or is this county on land?
It'd be through a lease agreement.
Okay.
To be used if we need the property.
We tried to find county-owned lands, and we couldn't find sites that were big enough or met our requirements. Some had cemeteries, that kind of thing. So,
So anyway, that work is ongoing, and we're going to have something to you, hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah.
So do you have any questions about any of that? Thank you. That's it.
Motion to adjourn. Second.
Second.
Your turn.
Thank you. We'll work.